We are on the air. My name is Jeffrey Davis. This is Radio Entrepreneurs, and we are always featuring the success and stories of entrepreneurship. Just closing down on 2017, working into 2018. A lot of things to think about, I think, with the coming year. The economy is changing dramatically. But one of the biggest stories for me over the last year is that entrepreneurs need to learn to be careful about what they say and do. And if we're going to talk about that, I can't think of a better person to talk to than Scott Fort, partner or member, Mintz Levin, the law firm. And welcome, Scott.
Yeah, it's nice to be here. Thank you for having me, Jeffrey.
You know, so many times in my career, more probably the vast, vast majority, entrepreneurs seem to think that they can make up their own rules. And they don't realize that owning their own business doesn't mean you can make up your own rules. Can you sort of address that whole issue?
Well, we work in the business world, and entrepreneurs tend to work at a pace that's faster than most. What makes them successful is sometimes not playing by the rules and working around the rules. But the reality is that those rules do apply. They apply to business people. They apply to non-business people, and many of the things that any of us do in the business world have to be compliant with the law, they have to be compliant with the regulations, and they oftentimes have to be compliant with general business decorum.
And what happens when they're not?
Well, lots of things can happen. In particular, what we sometimes see in the world of the law is that people send texts or they send emails, or they might even have telephone conversations that they think will never be seen or heard again. But the reality is, particularly in this day and age, is that all of it can be captured and can be put out into the public realm, maybe even making its way onto the front page of a newspaper or the front page of a legal brief. And people tend to regret that. But the reality is the regret is irrelevant. You have to be careful about what you do and what you say. And you should assume just about anything that you do or say in writing in particular, electronically specifically, could end up in the public realm.
Now, for me, I shouldn't disclose this, but, you know, I was once deposed in a lawsuit, and they asked me, how many emails do you have? And I looked at them, and I went, one. And they went, what do you mean you only have one email? You don't have a private email? And I go, no, I've worked in the same company for 34 years. I have one email. That's how everyone knows me. And they go, so you're saying all your personal and professional emails go through one address? And I realized at that particular point of time, that makes me quite vulnerable, doesn't it?
Well, frankly, Jeffrey, no, because no matter how many email addresses you have, they can still be found and retrieved electronically.
Right.
Hillary Clinton had this issue in a very different way. Just having a private one wasn't really all that private in the end of the day. The government was still able to get those as well. So the point is that no matter how many devices you have, no matter how many accounts you have, no matter how many phone numbers you have, all of it can be preserved. I'll give you an example of where it can come back to hurt you. I had a case a couple of years ago, a real estate case, where one side was accusing the other side of fraud. Our client was accusing the other side of fraud. And in a relatively weak moment, the other side sent his partner an email. And in that email, he essentially admitted that he had been caught. And he said it in somewhat crass terms, which I won't repeat now in this form. But he said, I'm blanked, meaning that he was caught, meaning that he was in trouble. And that's all that we ever needed in that case. And we began every brief in that case, every letter in that case, with those words, crossing out the bad letters. But it became so powerful, and yet it was written in late at night, never expecting to be seen again. But it became those two words, one a conjunction, became the pivotal element of that case and led to a swift and successful result for our client, all because this other party said, I'm blank.
Right, and it could have been late at night, fatigued, drinking. I hate to say, I know somebody who was once late at night drinking who left a voicemail that ruined a case for him.
Happens all the time, and some of these are lore. You can find them on YouTube. You can find them on the internet. But the point of all this is you don't want to be that person, and you need to be – everyone needs to be extremely careful about what they say. You know, even over the telephone, sometimes – and it's becoming very easy now – people can record telephone conversations. Now, in certain states, both – parties to the conversation need to consent to it being recorded in order for that to be lawful. But in other states, like Massachusetts, only one party has to consent to that recording. And therefore, someone could be secretly recording your telephone conversations. And that's not something I think most people would really expect. And it's a heck of a lot easier to do today, given the technology we have.
Well, you know, keeping entrepreneurs off the front page, I guess, is what we're talking about. And it must be difficult because, you know, entrepreneurs, if they're doing their job, you have to assume there's a fair amount of turnover. Let's say 20% a year. So in 5 years, you could turn over almost 100% of your staff of a mature firm. And there's got to be a lot of people on the streets who feel that they were not treated correctly and can create some kind of negativity for people. So you have to be very careful about how you handle everything, correct?
That's right. Even a termination or a separation, if it's not handled the right way, it could come back to bite you. And if we take it in a very different context, a very real context, a very timely context, the allegations that are pervading the country right now aren't exactly what you were talking about, but there have to be a very large number of people who are very nervous right now because they know that they had done something, said something, written something that they otherwise thought was long gone, deleted, and forgotten, and it's not. And while that context isn't the subject of this show, the point in the medium is the same, is that if someone were fired for not engaging in certain activity, and there were emails and texts that accompanied that departure, the recipient of them doesn't need to act upon them right away. There's what we call statute of limitations. They could wait a year. They could wait 2 years. They might even be able to wait 3 years, and in some cases even more, before bringing these up. And the sender of these, the person who's ultimately going to be damaged and harmed for having sent them, may think that it's long and forgotten, but it's not. It's there.
You know, I know some entrepreneurs, let's just say I'll draw a line in the sand, over the age of 60, who send out what I would call questionable humor emails. Is that a problem too?
Yes, there tends to be in our society a level of forgiveness based upon age that is...
Well, they're baby boomers, and they grew up in a different set of norms.
True, but the reality, back to your first point in this discussion, is that the laws apply to everybody equally. So if somebody wanted to force the issue, it's easy to get around the apology for not being technologically savvy or not being socially appropriate. Many people might forgive people for that, but there's no obligation to do so.
But if that email were to get, let's say, I'll give an example. Let's say that email were to get out into the general public, it could have the original sender's name on it, which could also embarrass them publicly.
That's right. I mean, you can forward to a million people
and that's what people do.
They do
forward emails and forget to take off people's original senders' names.
Yes, but I think for purposes of the primary audience that you might have here, we might be talking about younger people who are moving at the speed of light in their communications. And it's simple, it's quick, and it's easy. And sometimes maybe they just want to dismiss a topic out of hand with a swear or a brush off that could later be used to put together a breach of contract action. No one's thinking that when they're sending it. You know, I had a case a couple of years ago where someone said, "You know what? We're gonna stop working with this company, even though we have a contract, and we're gonna start working with this other company. But we're gonna make it look like the first company had breached the contract. But we really know all we're doing is moving to my favored provider here." Right. And I'm summarizing and paraphrasing the email, but that also hurt that case.
Well, I'm gonna change the subject a little bit. You do a lot of what I would call big company litigation. Going into 2018, is there anything that you see in big company litigation that small companies should learn?
Well,
sort of rules of thumb to pass down?
The entire world of privacy and cyber litigation and disputes is growing exponentially by the minute, whether it be the release of private data, whether it be the theft of trade secrets over the internet, whether it be the failure of a security firm to properly protect against that disclosure. These are concerns that we read about in the paper because they affect big companies, because ultimately sometimes they affect the customers and consumers. But a data breach could be really detrimental to a Fortune 100 company, but it would be absolutely fatal to a small growing company because they don't have the resources to deal with it.
Correct. I would agree with you, especially if your client list were to get out and data like that. That's interesting. Now, we're backing our way into where I usually start the interview, and that is sort of like, give us a little bit of your background, because you're an unusual attorney. Not everybody aspires to be the head of a litigation of almost 200 attorneys. I mean, there's got to be something unique about you. So describe your background to us. I know you don't like to talk about yourself.
Well, my background probably isn't all that interesting to a lot of people. I grew up in the Boston area, went to college in the Boston area, and law school in the Boston area. But I had the good fortune about 25 years ago to be introduced to Mintz Levin, which at the time was an established but growing law firm with tremendous lawyers. And I was able to join the firm and learn from some excellent lawyers, Bob Popio, Betsy Burnett, many others, who taught me what it meant to be a good lawyer. And among the many things that I was taught along the way was not simply to know the law and to apply the law in a rote fashion, but to understand your client and to understand what their objective is, and then to craft a strategy to help them achieve their objective. When clients come to us, they come to us not because they want us to file a lawsuit and see it all the way through appeal to the Supreme Court. They come to us because they have a problem and they want us to solve it. And we can't solve it unless we know them, unless we know their business. And that's something that I've been very fortunate to learn from some excellent colleagues over the last 25 years at my firm.
So you didn't mention your dad is an attorney as well. Did he teach you anything about the law, or he was just dad?
No, he taught me a lot about the law. He's an excellent lawyer and an even better person. And what I've learned from him was the ability to solve problems. And when clients come to you on a weekend, when clients come to you at night, to be able to jump into that and to work extremely hard find the path of resolution and to find the solution for their problem in a very compassionate way. I've learned a lot from him, but his energy, his talent, and his compassion are really unrivaled.
Oh, that's very nice. Scott, if someone wants to find you, connect with you, how would they do that?
Well, we go back to technology again. I'm on the web at www.mintz.com, as are all of our colleagues here. And that's probably the best way to find me.
Right, good. Are you on LinkedIn?
I am on LinkedIn. I'm now on Twitter too, Jeffrey.
Wow.
How about that?
well, thanks for being on the show today. We hope you come back again in 2018.
It's a real pleasure. Thanks for having
me. One of my favorite attorneys in all of anywhere.
Feeling is mutual.
We're going to take a break. Remind everybody, this is Radio Entrepreneurs.